a concerted catalytic effort to happen in our area. We sort of have a process as we go. One thing that we do is we'll provide a checklist of just different things that we want to make sure are happening in the city already. That it's not just one church or just one guy that just says, hey, I feel like it'd be great to, proclaim the gospel. But it really is a group of folks that have come together and said, you know, we feel like this is the timing of God, and this is something that will enhance the already gospel movement that's going on here, and it'll just add, some gasoline to the flame of what's going on. We look at it merely as a tool that the church can use. As far as the proclamation of the gospel and what we do, through the Palau Association, it's just a tool. It's just a tool that the church can use. It's just a tool, as I mentioned to you before, as a pastor, we use this effort to mobilize our folks and to get them excited about, we had folks in our church that had never shared their faith. I remember one specific person had been a believer for 8 years, and this was the first time that they actually shared their faith with somebody, just took that risk to share their faith. And so we see that time and time again, how churches use this as a tool to implement within their church. And the other thing that we look at is that this is relationship evangelism done in a concerted effort. This isn't something where, when we do a festival campaign or an evangelistic campaign, it's not, putting down a stage and just hoping people that are not Christians show up to hear the gospel. It's done very intentionally, in the sense that who are the 4, 5, or 6 people that God has put in your life that you can take a risk and reach out to and invite and use this again as a tool, to share the gospel. So those are our approaches as far as we work with, for, and through the local church. One of the things that that we've been looking at, as we do these festival campaigns. Right now, we're working. We're about to have a festival September 8th and 9th in Grand Rapids, Michigan. There's about 400 churches that are participating in this effort. It started about 2 years ago, as I mentioned a while ago, with just a group of about 20 folks. Some of them were pastors, some of them were business leaders, some of them were prayer mobilizers within the city. They had a burden to do something in West Michigan, and so they came together and they said, "Hey, let's approach the Palau Association to come and partner with us." And so, for the last year and a half, we've been, partnering with them, serving with them, and now there's about 400 churches. It started with just, like I said, a handful of folks, and it grew, and now, 400 churches, that are partnering. Some of the things I'll share with you in a minute, some of the things that, have, come out of that, and that, they will see continue on way past the September 8th and 9th, of enhancing, that city gospel movement. Francis Chan, you guys probably, have seen some of his messages, but he has this little illustration where he has a long rope. Have you guys seen that illustration? And he has about that much of the rope that's red, and it sort of signifies your life and the life of eternity. We like to look at these evangelistic campaigns sort of like that in the city gospel movement. The city gospel movement is something that God's been doing past, and he's going to be doing future, present as well. And this is just one little piece of that puzzle of what God wants to do in whatever that city is. And I would think, each one of you, in whatever context that is, it's the same thing, is that whatever God has called us to do, it's part of that ongoing overall gospel movement and what he is doing. As Henry Blackaby told us a few years back, right? Go where God is working. And so of just being sensitive to God, of seeing, what is God doing in our city, in my area, and that calling that God has in my life, whether it's because I'm a vocational evangelist, or I'm an outreach pastor, or I run a ministry within the city, or maybe it's a city that you've been called to do some work, how can my piece play a role in that overall gospel movement? And so that's what, that's one of the things that we try to look at. And so we really try to keep in mind that it's not event focused, but it really is movement focused. What's the difference? Well, event focused, number one is short-term goals, right? An event is an event, right? And events are great. Events are, you know, serve a purpose. And many of you have probably done events, whether out of your church or whether, you know, you're an evangelist, you do events. And events, I think, are key for many reasons. They're visible. They're catalytic. You know, they bring people together. But a lot of times, if the focus is just the event, what tends to happen is they're just short-term goals. It's, you know, May 19th is the event. We work towards that, and then it's done, right? And what tends to happen a lot of times is churches sort of go back to their sandbox, and it's done. It's a gleam in everybody's eyes. Maybe great things happened, right? And we see, you know, people come to Christ or, you know, whatever the impact is, but then it's over. And so, one of the things that we like to see, you know, as far as movement is, what are some long-term wins? You know, it may be that this, you know, our part in this whole city gospel movement is this much, but what is it that we are helping enhance ongoing? As, you know, I mentioned to you, we're going to be in Grand Rapids and we're going to have a festival at 8th and 9th. Well, all this work that's been happening the last year and a half and the work of pulling together 400 churches, and if any of you have worked with mobilizing churches, you know that's not an easy task, right? For churches to come together around one purpose and to really mobilize around that. And so the question has always been, what are some things that are emerging out of this whole coming together, this catalytic event? What are some things that are emerging that we can really take advantage of as the local community, as the local leaders, and say, here are some things that are going to be ongoing? And then we see our roles as really just people who are pouring gas on that and fire and letting it, you know, get bigger and bigger and bigger, and burn longer and longer and longer. And so, long-term wins. The other one is, an event is typically brought on by one single ministry. In a lot of cases, a movement usually requires a partnership, right? I mean, if you look at the definition of a movement, it's a group of people working together, to advance their shared cause or their political or social or religious or artistic ideas with the hopes of long-term change. So when you look at something as an event, sometimes it's really one single organization or one single ministry. When you look at it as a movement, you really do have to, or you would want to partner, with other ministries. You know, we look at the business world today and we look at so many partnerships now that, you know, that it's the partnership mentality of, you know, one corporation partnering with the other, to be able to get to places where they may not be able to get to, you know, if they did it alone. And so the idea within ministry is the same thing. What God has blessed the body of Christ with so many ministries and so many callings, and you know, even within here, if we start from over here and go over here, there's so many beautiful ministries that God has blessed us with, and God has blessed each and every one of you with. And how do we partner? How do we, you know, we may not reach, you know, this group of folks as well as, you know, this ministry does, and so how can we partner with them? The movement mentality, I think, is something that leads to more of a partnership mentality. Event really goes after results, which we all need results, right? As ministry leaders, as pastors, as, you know, wherever you lead, you have to see results, right? I mean, that's something that I think shows us, whether you're in a church setting or in a ministry setting, it shows us that we're advancing and that we're growing and that we're flourishing. But in a movement mindset, it's not just the results, but it's the value added. Yes, it's results. We want to see, of course, you know, in our ministry, and I think every one of ours, because you know, we're all here for around the cause of evangelism. The ultimate, you know, result is, you know, the people who come to Christ and their lives are transformed. But the question then, when it's movement mindset, is what are some other things that, you know, add value, like the unity of the body of Christ and the church coming together, like the connections and the collaboration that come around a movement that, you know, may not have ever happened if this wouldn't have, ever started. And so there's different things that can really emerge out of more of a movement mindset than just having an event mindset. The other thing is, how have we, you know, one of the questions as far as value added is, how have we enhanced that ongoing city gospel movement? Whatever God is doing in your city, how has what we have done enhanced that? And people can look at it and say, you know what, because this happened, you know, we are stronger, our city is stronger, and the gospel is stronger because of this, you know, campaign or this movement. And so those are some of the things as we look at, you know, event focus versus movement focus. What are some unifying components of a city gospel movement? One of them is prayer. As we look just in the context of what we do, there are three things that we look at: prayer, service, and evangelism. Those are three things that really any church, or I shouldn't say any church, but for the most part, any evangelical church can really wrap their arms around: prayer, service, and evangelism, right? Because God calls us to all three, and in many cases, there's not a lot of unclarity on any of those three. And so what does that look like in each city as far as prayer? I'll put it again just in context of some of the cities that we've worked with. I know, for instance, in one city, one of the goals for the prayer movement, and, you know, as I mentioned, when we go into a city, we always make sure that we come in as serving, you know, the local leadership. And so everything that's done is committee driven or team driven. And so the prayer efforts are always led by a group of people that's their heart and that's their passion. In Grand Rapids, for instance, the prayer initiatives are led by a key guy that has been already involved in prayer networks, you know, through the last many years, 10 years. And it's co-chaired by a lady who also has a heart for prayer and just has that passion. And so one of the goals that they wanted to see is they could identify when they first started, they said, we feel like there's probably a few hundred people that actively are involved in prayer. Now, all of us pray, and, you know, many Christians pray, and I'm sure there's many more than 200 people in the West Michigan area that are actively praying. But in the sense of intercessory prayer, of praying for revival in West Michigan, and really coming together on, different times of, periodic times, their goal is they wanted to see well over 5,000 people, intercessors, rise up through West Michigan, with the idea of using this event, you know, this festival, West Michigan, City Fest West Michigan, as the catalyst to bring people together, and really, get them to focus, but with the idea that, thinking way past the 8th and 9th of September, how can we mobilize these people and continue this prayer movement? And so one of the things that they wanted to do is they said, we want to mobilize, we want to recruit, over 5,000 people. Right now, there are a little over 2,000 intercessors in Grand Rapids that have officially signed up and said, we are going to be actively praying for revival in West Michigan. Well, that's exciting. It's exciting to see, you know, people come together like that around prayer because that's what they're passionate about. And as we go past the 8th and 9th of September, when the big proclamation festival happens, there's already a plan in place with this committee who's come together and said, here's what we want to see after the 8th and 9th. Here are some key elements, where people can continue to come around and use their gift and their calling of intercessory prayer. We saw it in another city where we did a campaign back in 2009. And even to this day, every quarter, hundreds of people come together and pray for Central Arkansas, for God to visit in revival, for the political leaders, for the churches. They meet in different places every quarter at different churches, different areas of the community. It's led by different, pastors or different leaders. And so that's one of the hopes, that we're seeing, that we've seen in other cities, and we're hoping to see in Grand Rapids. The other thing that has emerged out of prayer in Grand Rapids is that they had never had a pastoral prayer summit. just where pastors get away, you know, for 48 hours or 24 hours or, you know, and just pray one with another, for their ministries, pray for one another, have sort of a safe environment. You know how it is if you've been a pastor, you know, sometimes it's lonely out there, right? And so one of their objectives or one of the hearts that they had is let's do a pastor's prayer summit. Let's get away for 48 hours and just pray. And so, you know, I was, you know, I didn't share this with the committee as we were walking alongside and talking through this and see what it would happen. But I said, man, if they see 30 pastors, I will be happy, you know, because it's hard to get pastors away for, you know, a half a day, let alone, you know, 48 hours to pray. And so they ended up, you know, they started inviting pastors all around, and they ended up with close to 100 pastors come together in January to pray and get away, pray for one another. It was a beautiful time, a sweet time. So now they're thinking this is something, this is another legacy component, another part of the city gospel movement that is enhancing in the city, that they're already planning, you know, January, upcoming January for, you know, their next one, with the idea that every year that just continues to grow and pastors continue to gather. So prayer is a key element, and it's one that people in a city gospel movement, a city, can really rally around, and really probably the foundational piece of any city gospel movement. The other one, of course, is service. One of the things, probably a lot of you, have any of you heard Kevin Plow speak about what happened in Portland, or maybe read his book Unlikely? Raise your hand if you've done that. Okay, just a few of you. One of the things that we experienced, and we've seen it not just in Portland, but now in multiple cities around the country, is just the way that churches can come together, and enhance the city gospel movement around service. In Portland, in 2008, you know, Portland, Oregon, if you're familiar with Portland, Oregon, is a very unchurched, you know, area, and quite secular. Not a lot of attendance to church. I think at that time it was maybe 10-12%. The mayor, there's a great animosity between the mayor and the church. It's just this attitude of, you know, the church is against this and that and the other, and you know, not really relevant to, you know, all the needs of the city. Well, there's a meeting that happened where some church leaders gathered with the mayor and said, you know, how can we help you? We're just a handful of churches. How can we just gather together and just address some of the needs? Well, some of the needs, one of them that was really heavy on his heart was homelessness, and he outlined a few other ones, and they ended up rallying around some of those things. And what happened was, you know, at first there's a little bit of suspicion on it, on, you know, on the mayor's side, and, you know, he's like, what are these guys after? You know, what are they thinking? Well, one of the other focuses was just the public schools. And so one church in the Portland neighborhood, they were actually sort of in the suburbs of Portland. They're about 25 minutes from downtown Portland. They approached a school there called Roosevelt High School. Roosevelt High School, in its heyday, had about 1,500 students. By that time, they had about 300 or 400 students. It had just really gone down. The grounds, in its time again, the beautiful facade, beautiful school, it had just run down. And so they just approached this principal and said, "Hey, we're a church. It's a pretty good sized church." They said, "We just want to see if there's anything that we can do for your school." And so the principal ended up, you know, just sort of outlining a few needs that they had. And so they ended up mobilizing almost about 1,000 people out of their church to show up on a Saturday. It was only meant to be a Saturday cleanup type thing, and, you know, sort of feel good about it. And, hey, we served the school, and that's it. Let's go back to our church and, you know, business as usual. But what happened was it actually ended up in being this long-term relationship. As people were serving, some of the folks that go to that church work for Nike, that Nike's based out there. And so they start walking around the grounds. They see that the running track is just in complete disarray. And so they go back to Nike and say, "Hey, you know, we're doing this thing with this church. Do you think you guys could get involved?" Nike ends up resurfacing the running track. Just little things. It turned in from this one Saturday, "Hey, let's show up and clean," and to an ongoing relationship, to the point that the outreach pastor was spending so much time at the Roosevelt High School that the principal said, "You know what, I'm going to give you an office here because you're here all the time." And so this relationship, began to form. It got stronger and stronger. It turned in from just a cleanup project to a life on life, where mentors began, out of that church to show up and to spend time with the kids. They actually ended up starting a food closet and a food pantry and a clothes closet, because a lot of the kids that go to that school are actually homeless youth. And so, really cool things happen. But what the other neat thing about this is that the school superintendent saw this. And she said, you know what? I want to see, out of the 300 and some odd schools in the Portland school districts, I want to see a church school partnership like this in every one of our schools. And so this was 2008. It started in 2008. Now you fast forward to 2018. They're almost at about 300 church school partnerships. So they almost have reached their goal of every school having a church school partnership. So this is, part of what, we talk about as far as the gospel movement, is how can we as a church address the needs and be the relevant institution in our community, where a lot of times in a lot of neighborhoods, we've lost that relevance. We've lost that impact, in our community, and we've really become known as what we're against, and really instead of what we're for and what we do and how we love and how we impact. And so, service is a key component. We've seen it happen. That's just, I could spend all day here just giving examples of things like that happening in areas like Phoenix and Sacramento and Anchorage, Alaska, and the city gospel movement, really being enhanced through service and churches really coming together. In Grand Rapids, it's funny because, I don't know if you guys have been in Grand Rapids, but it's completely opposite than Portland. There's a church on every corner. It's sort of like the South, one of the things that we've seen there is where churches have come together and they're talking, and this is funny. We were in a conversation just not too long ago, and there are about 6 or 8 pastors sitting. We have a lot of round table discussions like this where pastors come in from different areas, and just sit and, what is God doing through your ministry? What is God doing through, and a lot of magic happens there sometimes just because of, collaborative efforts. But one thing that was really sort of funny is that, out of the 6 or 8 pastors, about, I think, 4 of them literally had churches right down the street from each other, and they all had food pantries. And their extent of collaboration was, okay, we'll do our food pantry on Tuesday, so you can do yours on Wednesday, you can do your... But what they found was the same people going to the same food pantries, just on Tuesday they're going here, Wednesday here. And so they started talking about that, and they said, is this really necessary? Is it necessary to have, 4 food pantries on the same street when we could really come together and put our resources together and do something of true impact, in our area? And so a lot of things like that, through the discussions that come around service. There's so many opportunities where churches can come together, and as easy as, on ramps of as easy as just showing up at the mayor's doorstep and saying, hey, how can we help, to other more in-depth, like, for instance, another city where out of the 450, 500 churches that participated in a Palau campaign, about 80 of them came together around foster care. And they said, we want to address, but not only do we want to address, we want to make a dent in the foster care system, because it was such an issue. And as of about a year and a half ago, this was about 5.5 years ago, as of a year and a half ago, They actually, the state came out and said that these churches, these 80 churches that came together to do this, are now taking in more foster kids than all the foster agencies combined in this state. And so those are some of the things that, around service and around, the city gospel movement, trying to be intentional about how the church, can unite around that. And of course, the last one is evangelism. Evangelism, of course, is the ultimate reason that we want to do this. We want to reach people's hearts and transform, have Christ and the Holy Spirit transform their lives. And so what are some things ongoing past the 2-day festival that we do, as far as our ministry? What are some things that can happen after that? For instance, one city that we did a campaign in last year in California, now they're doing this whole series of citywide evangelism training. How do we get the maximum amount of people in our our churches exposed to how do I share Christ in a more effective way? How do I share Christ with the person that serves me coffee at Starbucks, or the person that share a cubicle with me, or my neighbor? And so, again, it goes back to partnerships. The Palau Association, we have a calling. Each one of you have a calling probably to a certain ministry or to a certain demographic. But, you know, as we partner together, so like, for instance, evangelism, you know, like ministries like Alpha that we partner with, or Organic Outreach, or The Art of Neighboring, or many other ministries that can come alongside and really help pour gas on that city gospel movement and the evangelism side, as well as the prayer and the service. So the whole idea is celebrate what God is doing, but then accelerate in areas that as pastors and as churches come together and unite around a catalytic effort, accelerate in ways that, emerge and other opportunities that may come as churches unite. So those that's pretty much as far as church mobilizing and city gospel movement. I've got some other things that are more practical as far as how we approach a city. I'm not going to go into them now because I wanted to really sort of leave some time to for discussion and then also question and answers. There are some other practical things as far as how we actually, like the hands-on and how committees are, formed and how, that approach and who usually plays roles in different, leadership, scenarios and things like that. And I can send you those notes or that information if you really are interested in it. You can email me at Levi, L-E-V-I, dot Park, P-A-R-K, at Palau, P-A-L-A-U, dot org. And I am more than happy to help in any way I can, or if you have any questions or any material that we use, we are more than happy to share that with you. So, Alan, are you going to take over now as far as the discussion and question and answer?
Does anybody have questions? Let's just fire some questions at Levi.
How do you help foster the denominational diversity as these teams are formed in a city and as it grows from a few to 400? How do you help that strategically happen?
We try to be real intentional in the committees that are drawn. Like I said, our heart is to come alongside and serve the local leadership. So, our heart is not to come in and say, has to be done this way, but really walk alongside the local leadership. And so, like, for instance, in a movement that we'll do, like a city fest, is it's usually led by the local leaders, the steering committee that leads it. They usually invite two key business leaders to chair it in the city, and really try to be really keep in mind geography, diversity, and who are two really visible leaders that can lead that. But then along with that are pastoral chairs. And so, again, the pastoral chair is trying to be intentional on denomination, geography, race, different factors like that. So, for instance, just to use, again, Grand Rapids, just because we're right close to it, there's 12 pastoral chairs, which that's a pretty big team, but that's how they wanted it because it's really West Michigan, not Grand Rapids, and so they really wanted to make sure that Holland was represented and Muskegon, and then denominationally, there's a Assembly of God guy sitting on the on the committee, and a Reformed, and so it would try to be real intentional at what that leadership looks like, not just the top leadership, but every committee that is led. The City Serve Committee, which, really focuses on mobilizing churches around service, that's quite diverse. It's a team of about 45 people, and you've got some nonprofits, you got a lot of outreach pastors, and then geographically, racially, guys, gals, just, all kinds of different folks that we try to, bring into that committee.
Other questions?
How How do you help the pastors or the committee assimilate the unbelievers into a believing community?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that was sort of the second half of when we go into the actual proclamation phase of the festival. We have five phases that we typically look at a campaign. The first one is the invitational phase, which is that's when just that smaller group are kicking it around, and so we come in and just talk to them about that, and you know, and give them a checklist and say, here's some things that the Palau Association needs to see before we make a year-long commitment to partner with the local. The foundational period is when all the churches are recruited and laying down that foundation. The mobilization period, which is a time where there's a lot of equipping going on, training, and then mobilizing around service. And then the proclamation period, of course, is when we get into this high visibility of proclamation of the gospel. So like going into the 8th and 9th of September, there'll be all kinds of affinity events, as we call them. So going into like four or five different prisons and taking some of the components of the festival into the prisons and presenting the gospel. We'll be doing some luncheons, like a women's luncheon, filling in a room, like a hotel type setting with lunch, and ladies inviting their non-Christian friends to come here. You know, it's very relational. And as I mentioned a while ago, we really always try to focus on relational evangelism done on a concerted effort. This isn't mass evangelism, hoping people show up, but it's really intentional of, you know, people reaching out to the Andrew reaching out to his brother type, you know, scenario. And so we'll have some affinity events like the women's luncheon, the business civic luncheon, Latino evening, and then, of course, the two-day festival, which is basically a bunch of music and kids area and action sports, and then the gospel is given in multiple settings there. So the question. So then after the gospel is given, people respond to the gospel. Like in Grand Rapids, the idea is to see 3,000 or 4,000 what we call festival friends, which they go through training and they're there to pray with that person, to encourage them in the response that they just made, and then connect them to a church. So 70% of the people that we see come to Christ, as I said a while ago, it's very relational, are brought by a friend. And so we try to determine if that whatever that friend's church is, that's the first connection. So if I go to First Baptist Church and I brought you, well, they're going to connect you to First Baptist Church because there's a natural connection there. And then the other 30% that just saw a billboard or heard the music and they just stumbled onto the festival site, then we connect them geographically. And so what we do is we ask every one of those 400 churches that are participating in Grand Rapids to give us a follow-up plan, so that we know that if we give them folks that responded to the gospel, they're not going to put them on their desk and they sit there for 6 months, but they are actually going to call them. We get them out. We get every one of those names out to the churches the Monday after the Sunday festival that we have, so that they have the whole week to start working on them. And then we connect them to some other on our end. That's the first connection, because that's where it's going to really happen, because it's the churches. That's the church's responsibility. But then on the Palau Association, then we have a whole mechanism of Bible studies that we send them and things like that, just in case they fall through the cracks, they've got sort of another tier. Great. Any other questions?
Other questions. We want everybody to be able to hear the questions. So,
can you repeat those five stages again?
Yes, the invitational, the foundational, the mobilization stage, proclamation stage, and then the last one I forgot was the continuation phase. What happens after the festival? Part of that is the follow-up on the new believers at the festival, but the second part of that is what has emerged out of this whole movement that the local community is going to take forward. Like, I mentioned to you this whole foster thing that happened in another city, or this prayer endeavor, and what are some of these big pieces? So already the local committee in Grand Rapids is talking, these pastoral chairs I told you about and others are talking about, what is this going to look like on the 10th of September? What is the gospel movement? What are some things that have emerged out of this that we're going to really wrap our arms around and continue on, way past, the festival?
A couple more questions.
So with that, I think you mentioned, or maybe I heard this, but they're going to want to circle around and do this something similar in the next year, but you're probably not going to come back.
No, typically, they won't do a visible catalytic evangelistic, like the big two-day festival. But what they will do is they'll rally around the three main focuses of prayer. What are some wins that we've seen, you know, as far as prayer is concerned? So right now, the two big ones are they're already saying, here are some things that we're going to do with these 2,000 intercessors that we have. Here are some focuses that we're going to have for 2019, as well as, you know, the Pastor's Prayer Summit. That's going to continue on. So prayer, the service part of it, in Grand Rapids or in West Michigan, we typically call it City Serve. And in West Michigan, they wanted to be different, so they called it One West Michigan. The reason they called it One West Michigan is that they wanted every community to adopt that and to just basically call their own. Like, so now there is a group of folks in Holland saying, we are starting a service endeavor and prayer endeavor with the churches in Holland, and we're calling it One Holland. There's another area called Kentwood, and they already have something called One Kentwood with the same idea that the pastor's there. Because, I mean, in any community, you know, typically, you know, I shared this story about Portland and that church that was 25 minutes outside of Portland. That's not typical. I mean, typically churches want to impact the city or the area in which they are. And so, so in Grand Rapids, that's going to be the ongoing, you know, One West Michigan with, you know, other, you know, smaller communities adopting that and having, you know, making it organic in the sense that each community really focuses on their community.
Okay, we got time for a couple more questions.
When you engage a mayor and his team, what exactly does that look like from the perspective of a pastor in a partnership?
Yeah, it's different in every, you know, city, and some cities already have, you know, the churches or the pastors have a good relationship already with the mayor, you know, and others, you know, it's not not as typical. And so some of the ones I've been in, I was at one in the Beaverton area, which is part of Portland, and it was maybe 6-7 pastors, and myself, Kevin Palau, we all went to the mayor, and he was a little shocked. He was stunned at first because he walked in. You know how mayors or any civic leaders, they always get hit up for, you know, they need something. Somebody needs something. So if you're there to see the mayor, it's because you need something. And so just the first 5 minutes, it was interesting to see his reaction because, you know, he thought there are these 6-8 pastors there. He thought, okay, they're here to, you know, they have an axe to grind, you know, or they want to talk about. And, you know, so they basically said, hey, mayor, we're 6-7 pastors here. We're here to, we want to serve the city. And we just want to see what are three things that keep you up at night right now. You know, what are some issues that we as a, you know, so that we're not just out there, you know, thinking that we know what some of the needs are, but we want to hear from you because you have the fingers on the pulse of what's going on in the city. We just want to hear from you. And that just started a relationship, you know, with the mayor where, you know, they began talking, they began discussing, and they were able to address some of the issues that, you know, he had in that area.
So you suggest having a group of pastors also with you in that engagement?
That's typically the most effective, just again, on the unity sake of things, of being able to collaborate with other pastors, number one, you know, and just that unity of showing, you know, as John 17 says, that we are the body of Christ. It's not just us, you know, doing our own thing or this, but we are 6-7 pastors in our community that are concerned about, you know, and want to serve. So it shows that unity, but then it also allows for resources, you know, in the sense that, you know, one church may not be able to do everything, but, you know, if there's 6-7 churches together, you know, they can. I remember in Scottsdale, Arizona, which, you know, you wouldn't think Scottsdale. If you know where Scottsdale is, it's sort of the affluent area of Phoenix for the most part. But there are big pockets in Scottsdale that there's a lot of elderly people in Arizona. If you didn't know that, but they move there, you know, for retirement. And then there are actually pockets of impoverished areas in Scottsdale. And so these pastors got together, and somehow this lady came to that meeting as well, and they're talking about, you know, how could we make a bigger difference, you know, in our community? We all do our things. We all have stuff that we do to make an impact. And but what can we do? And this lady raised her hand and says, let me share with you what my job. And she says, I'm the code enforcement officer for Scottsdale, Arizona. And she said, my job is pretty depressing because what I have to do is when I see, you know, houses or people that their houses are out of code, I have to write them up and give them a ticket. And she said, the problem with that is most of them are, they can't do anything about them because they're either elderly and they can't do it, or they're impoverished and, you know, they don't have money to fix it. And so the light bulb goes on, you know, all these guys, and they say, right here, here's how we can work together. They formed teams out of their churches. They assigned a guy that was like the project manager. And so now what she does is she calls this guy. And like, if there's an issue, say, hey, so-and-so has this issue address, and that gives them like 24 hours to send a team out there, fix it up. Then she goes and redoes, or, you know, revisits. And so, I mean, it's an awesome opportunity of these churches just coming together. And right here, here's somebody from the city. Oh, we can handle that, you know, but it was them pulling their, you know, their resources together as a group of pastors or churches. Great.
Sorry.
You mean like people who respond to Christ? We're still sort of old school. We still use decision cards, but we also do texting. So a lot of people, so it's almost about half and half. I mean, you got your younger generation that, you know, and our festivals are sort of focused on a younger generation, but then, you know, cards as well. We're trying to move more and more towards electronic, but there's still that always the need of, you know, some people filling out cards and, yeah.
Guys, just thank Levi.
Thank you.